Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you. Help, I
need somebody. Help. You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Hello and welcome to Real Recovery. So glad you joined us tonight. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and at his lake studio facing the lake, a man who combats excessive daytime sleepiness with sleeping, George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Yeah, I got the new driveway nap chair.
Nice. So you see a problem and you find an answer. I love this.
I need to get some keep off the grass signs to put in my yard and I'll be all set.
Yeah.
I've reached another level.
Don't you just yell at people with that message when they come by on your lawn? Just get off?
If I'm awake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got the guard dog Bob that's usually asleep too.
Yeah.
I am really looking forward to our show tonight because we've never had a show like this.
This is a different one for sure. We're going to talk about drug use, but the drug is anabolic steroids. Why the pause?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, to be honest, self-disclosure, if I could hit the T-ball 20 yards farther, I might look into it. Now, I can see how people get involved with that, as we do other recreational drugs, if we can use that term. It's going to make my life better.
Yes.
And the deception is sin is fun for a season.
Mm-hmm. And I think,
and then the disaster.
Yeah. I think it's kind of a universal idea that a lot of people have something about their physique they're not happy with. And if they could do something to change it, they would. And there's such an allure for younger men and even older men now to use steroids to try to regain their strength or to take their competitiveness to the next level. And it's rampant in the bodybuilding world. And our guest tonight was, I think, Mr. Ontario. So he had a lot of success and also got out of his using steroids. And he's going to tell his story tonight. So it'll be good.
Mr. Ontario meets Mr. Recovery. This is going to be a big show.
It's going to be a good one, yeah. Yeah. So,
hey, you know, we do a step every week, Bill, and of course there's no magic in the steps. They're our way of walking out our faith. I wanted to do step three tonight.
Okay.
Where we make a decision to turn our life and our will over to the care of God as we understand him. And we understand him to be Jesus Christ because Jesus said, I am the way, I am the truth, I'm the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So we want to be very clear on that. But I want to go back to making a decision. Bill, you've worked with a lot of guys over the years. And we can kind of move past this in the step. You got to make this decision every day. And not just that you're going to not drink today or not eat things that are harmful for you or whatever your behavior is, or if you're like me, if you're like I am, there's a lot of behaviors. But I also have to pick up my cross and deny myself daily. Choose today whom you will serve. That's Jesus. And we talk a lot about our non-negotiables, Bill. For me, I pray for sobriety, as you know, the power, strength, and desire to stay sober today before I get out of bed. And even the Big Blue Recovery book says, upon awakening, we turn our thoughts to God. What would he have us do today? So making a decision is very important. And a lot of the people that we've worked with, alcoholics, addicts, Bill, haven't been able to do that. Or they make a decision once, and then they go back out. And so I think that's a very important thing not to be overlooked. A very simple way to do it is, okay, I'm waking up today as a recovering alcoholic addict. How am I going to live my life today? How am I going to help people hear about God? And how am I going to keep myself on the straight and narrow? I can't give away what I don't have. If I lose my sobriety, I still have my salvation, but it's going to hurt my witness. And it's not going to be honoring to God. It's going to be a sin to do that. And I don't ever want to forget that. One of the reasons I like listening to our show is hearing what happens to people who go back out. Okay? Because there's a part of me, Bill, that thinks, I'm okay. I'll never have to mess with that again. Can you relate to any of this?
I can. Yep, I hear it all the time.
And I think for a lot of guys, it's not making the decision. But let's take this a little farther. God created us for a purpose. Read Psalm 139. And he's numbered our days. Well, he's got a job for us to do. Once we become Christians, our life should be different. We're not going to be happy unless we're looking to get all things from God.
Mm-hmm.
John Piper, I think it was Pleasures of God, or maybe it was Desiring God, talks about being a Christian hedonist, that the greatest pleasure you're going to have is following, worshiping Jesus Christ in all things. And I read a book, Wild at Heart, I think it was, or Wild Heart, about everything we do is an act of worship, and it's either to ourself or to God. So you can be working out at the gym and use that as a way to worship God, or doing a long run or a walk. And Bill, I like that because it helps me incorporate my faith and my walk and gives me more pleasure, I think, Bill. I think as Christians, when we have like a nice steak, which I haven't had in a while, now that I think about it, I'm a little hungry, I can think about giving God glory and it makes the steak better. That might sound funny, but I think when you tie everything in your life, like our guys, your whole life is your recovery. Your whole life is worship. You know, you're either worshiping God with it or worshiping yourself or something else.
Mm-hmm. We should have an attitude of gratitude when we eat a nice steak, because so much of the world goes to bed hungry. So, yeah, I get exactly what you're saying. And when I think of step three, George, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, I always think of Romans 12:1, which is, therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. So I think in this body dysmorphia, Sean's story with the bodybuilding and more is better, and I'm not happy with what I have, we're probably staying in control of our bodies and not offering them as living sacrifices, and there you're down a road to sin.
Oh, absolutely. I think self-esteem is a big problem, and it's got to be God esteem, Bill. We have a friend that got a Ferrari this year, and he was telling me he was getting gas at the station, and a guy came up to him and he said, "Great car. Why did you get it?" And our friend said, "Low self-esteem." And he said, "I just blurted it out, and I realized that's the truth." And after you have something like that, I'd like to find out, I'm sure after a month, it's not that great anymore. And nothing is good enough for us apart from Christ. Nothing.
Yeah. And of course, scripture says, I think it's in Ecclesiastes, that not only does God give us everything we have, but he also gives us the ability to enjoy it. So there's a lot of people that have expensive toys, but they're unhappy. There's guys that have great physiques from bodybuilding, but they're unhappy. Or, you know, females who have got, you know, beautiful physiques from athletics, and yet they don't like their bodies. So, you know, we can go down that road, and I think we will explore it a little bit tonight with Sean, and we'll find out about his journey and his use of steroids and his being drawn into wanting more and yet not being happy. It's kind of a universal issue with the human condition, George.
You know, I used to get my hair cut at Jack Carter's barbershop from a guy named Lloyd. I think you know the guy.
I know Lloyd, yeah.
And he had a little sign, "All things in life will soon be past. Only that done for Christ will last."
I love it.
And I thought, I don't know how that ties in, because I got to come back every 3 weeks and see you, you know. But the point there is that's true. And here's a guy that was doing his job and witnessing to me.
Yeah.
Because I remember that.
Yeah. All right, George, let's take that break that we do right around this time. And then when we come back, we will bring on our guest, Sean Maves, all the way from Canada. So we're looking forward to hearing his story. Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Real Recovery. If you're just new to the show, you can always learn more about us at myfaithradio.com. Just go to the website and check out the Real Recovery page. We have all kinds of former podcasts there you can go listen to as well. We'll take a short break and be right back. We'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome back to Real Recovery. So glad you can join us tonight and be part of your Sunday evening. Bill and George have got a great show lined up for you tonight. I think pretty much, George, everybody at some point has some kind of body dysmorphia. I don't know if you know what that word means. I don't want to throw you off right away, but
big word.
It's a big
for
word.
Such a young person.
I get
to
that. I get it. But
yeah,
there's something about your body you don't like. You want to change it. You're unhappy with it, and I think that's a pretty universal feeling for most people.
Yeah, I think you're right. And you know, the media and the internet and Facebook and Instagram and all that doesn't help, does
right.
it?
Nope. And sometimes in the extremes, you can go one way or the other. And we're going to talk tonight to Sean Mapes. Sean is a bodybuilder and was Mr. Ontario. So we've got a Canadian friend with us tonight. We're excited to hear about his story. But, you know, you live a life of steroids and hardcore bodybuilding, and it left him empty. Now, if you had that kind of physique, George, you'd be walking around year-round with your shirt off, you know, wouldn't you, flexing your biceps?
I do it anyway. I do it anyway, yeah.
I shouldn't have asked that question. All right.
Yeah.
Let's bring Sean onto the program. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hey, Bill and George, thanks for having me on the show. Great to be on the Faith Radio Network with you today.
Oh, we're glad to have you on. We're excited to hear your story, Sean, because, you know, like every young kid, nobody wants to get, you know, sand kicked in their face, and everybody wants to be big and strong, and everyone kind of wants to feel like they're in good shape. But I know that's probably part of your motivation, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's no question. My interest actually in bodybuilding started when I was 12 years old. You guys remember the late 70s, early 80s television series, The Incredible Hulk, starring Lou Ferrigno?
Oh, yeah. I say to George all the time, you don't want me mad. You're not going to like me if I get mad.
Yeah, when I was 12 years old, I used to race home to see that show Thursday, 7:30, fight with my sister to get the TV. No remote back then, no Netflix. You missed it. And, you know, everybody who liked the show was waiting for that moment when somebody would get David Banner mad enough to see the green guy come out.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it started for me.
Yeah. So at 12 years old, did you find your way to the gym, or did you start doing push-ups in your room, or when did you start getting engaged in weight training?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in a very strict family. My father was a very hardworking man, but he was dead set against spending any energy on weight. So, you know, I didn't even ask him for weight set. But what I ended up doing in my senior year of high school, started doing push-ups, and then university, the serious working out. And part of the thing for me was the bodybuilding magazines. And you'll ask most guys who grew up in the late 80s, early 90s, 70s even, it was all about bodybuilding magazines, what you've seen in the magazines. I studied the workout routines and diets of top guys in the mid-80s, Bob Paris, Lee Haney, Tom Platz, Rich Gasperi, Sean Wright. Did any of those names ring a bell with you guys?
I sat next to Tom Platz at a restaurant in Santa Monica one day, yeah.
Yeah, Tom Platz, of course, was known for his leg development. And, you know, between classes, I was I did my undergrad at Carleton U, which is Dan Aykroyd's alma mater. And between classes, I used to go to pick up the latest bodybuilding magazine, hit the gym, started to work out. Pretty serious second year university, six days a week in the gym, six meals a day. People would question exactly what I was doing. Definitely had some body image disorder issues. So I've always felt I wasn't big enough. You know, you start comparing yourself to what you see in the magazines, and then you got a problem. The obsession led to an addiction. By fourth year, I started to use anabolic steroids. And this is just months after something very tragic happened in our family. My brother passed away. He was only 10 years old. It was a tragic incident. He was riding his bicycle. He crossed the road. We think he didn't look. He wasn't looking where he was going. He was struck, killed instantly by a vehicle. Heart was broken. And, you know, this is something I've written about in Faith and Fitness magazine. I shared on K-Love Facebook page also. You know, I took all that raw emotion into the gym. And, you know, I was just committed, just totally committed to making sure that my brother's, you know, I kind of choke up even talking about it right now. My brother's death didn't go in vain. I was going to use that, you know, to propel me to the next level. And that was my mindset. What I didn't count on happening when I returned back to school, fourth year university, Carleton U, was the temptation. Take the steroids. I started doing oral steroids for a year. I could bench press 300 pounds natural, 17-inch arms. Within a year and a half, I was bench pressing 370, close to 400, 19-inch arms. And then at that point, I started to seriously think about doing some bodybuilding competitions. All roads went through Toronto back then. Toronto was kind of the Mecca North, if you will, of bodybuilding up here in Canada. Robert Kennedy, of course, founded Muscle Mag, one of the leading muscle magazine publications in the world, headquartered right here in Toronto. He was friends with Arnold, and you know, guys knew that around Toronto. When I moved here, everybody was hoping to get a photo shoot with Robert and some of his photographers who would go around different gyms. 89, long story short, 89 won Mr. Ontario Heavyweight Champ, which was a qualifier for the Canadian Nationals. So at that point, I started to see some of my dreams. My dreams were just far off in the distance. All of a sudden, it started to come into reality. But the problem with the whole thing is that I just had totally turned this bodybuilding thing into an idol. And I've talked about this on Facebook, YouTube, social media. When you make health and fitness your main focus, it can slowly turn into an idol. And it certainly was an idol in my case. And you know, back then also, I don't know if you guys remember, it was kind of the heyday of WWF wrestling. You remember some of the guys back then, Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior?
Yes. I don't want to have another story, but when I was working at an exercise equipment store in college, Hulk Hogan had just landed in the Twin Cities and came into the store and says, "Where can I go hardcore train?" And I, at the time, sent him to the most hardcore gym I knew.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he was a big name. Jim Helwick, former Mr. Georgia, became a pro wrestler. And, you know, I think some of the promoters back then were looking for bodybuilders. So all these things were in my head. I was really hoping to move to California and get a photo shoot, stuff like that. But what I didn't count on a year after I won the Ontario show is my life turned upside down very quickly. What happened was the gym I was training at closed down. I found myself in a hospital. One of the shots, I was taking injectable steroids. I don't know if I was using as much as some of these pro guys, but whatever I was using put me in a hospital. It was a scare. You know, guys, it was a train wreck waiting to happen. And I've talked about this on Canada's Yes TV. I remember one day specifically, I come back to my house. All my roommates had left, and it was just me and my trophies. That was it. I had no material possessions. I put everything into bodybuilding. That was it. And my work and my relationships were broken, and I was just living this empty life. And I was, at the same time, I was professing to be a Christian. I accepted Christ at a Bible camp upstate New York when I was a teenager. And now I just completely forgot about him. But you know what? The beautiful thing about God is this. God loves us too much to leave us the way we are. Some curious things started to happen a few days after, you know, that incident in the house. It was a friend who was a former roommate called me up. He said, "Sean, why don't you come back to church? Why don't you come back to this group? Got a great group of people, in the 20s, 30s category." And, you know, I started to come back. I reluctantly came back to church. And God started to breathe life back in me. I remember the day I threw the last of the steroids in the garbage. The beautiful thing about, you know, relationship with Christ, you guys know better than I do almost, is that God allows U-turns. He's the God of the second chance. He's the God of the reversal. I can, you know, we can talk about this for hours. You know, his mercies are everlasting. And, you know, those bodybuilding dreams, I just left them in the rearview mirror. I was on a show at 99.9 Faith FM, and the host asked me off air. She goes, where do you think you'd be today, you know, if you wouldn't have made those choices to leave it, you know? And I said, I don't think you'd be alive, to be honest. In the 90s, the sport changed for the worse. There was already a fair amount of drugs in the sport in the 70s, 80s. The 92, Dorian Yates stepped on the stage, and that was the start of the mass monster era. That's when the guys started to look different. Their muscles were even thicker than ever. It's because, not really because the training changed, but the drugs started to change too. The guys started to use synthetic growth hormone, and they started to couple that with insulin and Synthol and all this stuff, diuretics, and guys started to die off. There's some of the top guys, we can talk about it later, paid the ultimate price. You know, there's a growing list of pro wrestlers and bodybuilders who've passed away before their 50th birthday. And, you know, it's a dangerous sport. And I try to reach out now to people on Facebook, social media, and these radio shows on the dangers about using steroids. And yet on the same side, you know, there's nothing wrong with going to the gym three, four times a week and staying healthy. So it's one of those subjects that bodybuilding, weight training, that they can, there's both positives and negatives. There's no question.
You know, Sean, when I was seeing some of those athletes back in the 70s, you know, guys like Frank Zane, who were aesthetically, you know, really in great shape. And then you talk about Dorian Yates, and I know we're losing some listeners with this name dropping, but it really became chemical warfare. I'm not taking away from how hard people were working and what their genetic potential was, but it got to be the combination of the massive amount of drugs they were taking.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, there were drugs. We can't be naive. There was drugs absolutely in the 70s, no question. But the amount of drugs that the guys are using now, I quoted this stat on 99.5 Robbie's show. There's one pro bodybuilder who wants to remain anonymous on a reputable website, and he claims he uses 20,000 US on a 16-week competition cycle. Those numbers are off the charts. I think I spent $2,000 or $3,000 in total, you know, the 2.5 years off and on I was cycling. So, you know, this has gone way, way off the charts. And, you know, I don't like throwing just bodybuilders under the bus here. I don't like doing that at all because it's in pro sports also. I mean, we can get into that later. There's a growing list of athletes in pro, you know, so some of these professional leagues who have come out and said, yeah, we're using it also. It's hidden because there's big money involved, right? So it's a sad reality.
George, are you there?
Yeah.
I thought we lost George too. That's the problem. We're not in the same studio.
No, it's stunning to me. I know nothing about this. So I'm just listening and not to get people mad at me. But I never realized it was a sport, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, we'll take a break. We'll give George a chance to do some research on this sport. We come back, lots more with Sean Maves, our guest. You listen to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space.
Welcome back to Real Recovery, Bill and George. We've got a chance to chat tonight with Sean Maves. He is a bodybuilder and a guy who went through a lot of time using a couple, 2.5 years of using steroids and on and off and trying to get everything out of bodybuilding that was leaving a hole in his heart. Even though he was a believer, there was still pain. And Sean, did you kind of drift away from the Lord during some of this time?
Yeah, absolutely. I describe myself as the prodigal son during those years. There's no question.
Yeah.
I'd fallen away from God. And, you know, it took actually God's help to bring me back. I can't even claim that I really did it myself. He organized. I was talking about this with my wife a couple of days ago. If God would have tried to intervene during those, you know, before some of these competitions, I don't think I would have came back to him at that point. I was just so, you know, dialed into what I was doing at the time. So,
mm-hmm.
When you quit doing the steroids, did you have any psychological, physiological withdrawal from that?
Yeah, no question. This is something that concerns a lot of bodybuilders who have taken steroids off and on for 5, 10, 15 years. How do you come off of this stuff? I mean, there's a number of consequences. First of all, psychologically, they are addictive. You know, guys get addicted to size. I'll give you a quick story. Rich Piana was probably known as one of the biggest bodybuilders out there. He was former Mr. California. He ran 5% nutrition line. And his objective, he would tell people on his, you know, he had about 1 million followers on Instagram, would be to get his objective was to get as big as possible. And, you know, there is such a thing as bigorexia, which is a term you can Google it, which is kind of the opposite of anorexia. And a lot of guys, you know, in bodybuilding and workout, a lot of them suffer psychologically because they don't feel they're big enough. They compare themselves to the guys in the magazines. And psychologically, when you come off it, you know, unless you really, unless you really have God in your life, I don't think it's possible to really come off these drugs without, wanting to go get back on them because they're psychologically, they're addictive. There's no question.
Sean, did you have a doctor prescribe these steroids or were they a little bit in the back room at the gym?
Yeah, no, it was all black market. Now here's the thing that I know some pro athletes now who are bodybuilders will claim that they have doctors, and they probably do. They probably do have some doctors with, you know, medical licenses doing this stuff, but it's still legal. It's still legal. They do all the blood work, and, you know, this is the problem in social media. You'll get these huge social media channels, YouTube. I'm not going to give any names, but guys know what I'm talking about, and they'll promote how you can do this safely. I don't buy it. I see a growing list of bodybuilders who are passing away by 55 years old. I see reports on there's no question on the side effects: heart, kidney, liver damage, prostate cancer. If I'm talking to someone who has microscopic prostate cancer cells, then you're taking growth hormone. What you're doing is you're rolling the dice because growth hormone will accelerate not only healthy but cancer cells. So I try to talk guys out of it. I think it's great to work out, but when you cross that line, you start taking anabolics and growth hormone, insulin, synthol, all this stuff, you run into trouble.
Yeah, Sean, I've heard that steroids have gotten down as far as even at a high school level, which is stunning to me.
Yeah, 3 to 7. The numbers are, I did a little bit of research, anywhere between 3 to 7% is the estimate of high school students who have tried anabolics, mostly male. You know, mostly for appearance. Some guys will use it for their football, launch their football career, wrestling, stuff like that. But a lot of kids are taking this stuff off the black market just to look good, you know, and just kind of ignoring the side effects. So, you know, that's just what's happening. Adults, 3 to 4 million Americans, the estimate is, have tried anabolics. So, that's close to 1% of the population. I don't think there's 3 to 4 million competitive bodybuilders out there. So a lot of people are just taking this stuff just for cosmetic reasons.
Plus, you see all kinds of ads where they're trying to entice older men to try to recapture their youth with some formula, which may or may not be steroids. But I have known men that have used a low dose of steroids to try to get their energy back and their drive and all of that. So it's a drug that people will reach out for.
Yeah, there's no question. It can become very addictive. Like I said before, when you make health and fitness or bodybuilding your main focus, you can get spun into the cycle of perfectionism. And when that happens, you know, you'll always imagine nothing will be perfect enough. You know, there'll always be something wrong. You know, maybe your calves aren't big enough, your biceps aren't big enough for X, Y, Z. Your macronutrients, your micronutrients aren't, you know, quite the way they should be. And it can just, just kind of morph into this addiction. And I certainly experienced some of that in my 20s. God was kind. He helped me get out of it and helped me, you know, see through it. You know, self-improvement is okay, but, you know, real change and recovery comes from a transformed, renewed mind. And that mind needs to come from Christ. Romans 12:2 talks about that. I try to encourage people, you know, don't try to get off this stuff by yourself. You need help. You need the Lord's help, and you need, you know, some wise counsel around you.
I would imagine there's not a recovery group you could go to for this, or am I wrong?
Yeah, I haven't done a whole lot of research. I think it's pretty thin. Here's an interesting, you know, sidebar to the conversation. Well, there's a lot of females who struggle with body dysmorphia. We know that, and there's a lot of help out there. I mean, do you guys remember the late 70s, early 80s recording artist Karen Carpenter, who suffered from anorexia?
Sure.
Yeah, Karen, her death in 83 actually, of course, raised the awareness of some of these eating disorders. Now, when you flip over to the males, I don't see a whole lot of support for guys who are suffering from body dysmorphic disorders. I think it's just one of those things where guys will just say, I'll handle it myself. And a lot of times it's not handled very well, actually. And that's why we have got a growing number of men who suffer from addiction to some of these performance-enhancing drugs.
Mm-hmm. John, do you see social media being something that's making this whole situation worse? Because you are constantly seeing images of people who are probably in much better shape than the average person looking at Facebook and think, well, I don't look like that, so I'm not happy.
Yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head right there. The top guys in bodybuilding are well promoted, but they're really living unhealthy lifestyles. I mean, if you go to the average bodybuilding contest, the most unhealthy people in the audience in the whole stadium will be the guys on stage. It's really an unhealthy lifestyle. I mean, there's guys who paid the ultimate price. We talked about that earlier. Mike, I'm going to give a couple stories. Mike Matarazzo was a top 10 guy. Bodybuilder in the late 90s, early 2000s. He passed away when he's 49. But what a brave soul. He mentioned months before he passed away that he believed that his health issues stem from his addiction to steroids. And I know my heart always goes out to the friends, family, and fans when we talk about some of these athletes who've paid the ultimate price.
Yeah, it's very sad. So when you got restored from this addiction, did you find that you had to adjust your expectations for how you were going to train and look, and you were going to probably have comments from people saying, hey, Sean, what happened to you? Did you lose some weight? You know how that can sort of affect your psyche as well.
Yeah, there's no question that I went through a bit of that. But because I was grounded in Christ, Christ was he was my rock, you know. And I knew, here's the thing, I knew if I trusted him, he had something better for me. And I just trusted that. I still worked out, still hitting the gym 3 times a week, doing some natural supplements. You know, I still am pretty strict with my diet, you know, five meals a day, maybe a protein shake or two in there also. You know, I only train, we've been locked down here for about 15 months up here in Toronto off and on. The gym's been closed down. I've been doing, you know, small workouts in my apartment, but, you know, if this would have happened back in my 20s, I would have been devastated. Can't hit the gym. I'm losing weight. I'm losing size. You know, it's that bigorexia. It's that body dysmorphic disorder I talked about earlier. And I think, you know, there's a growing number of men who suffer from it.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any to the sport, any function to it other than looks?
No, it's totally aesthetic. I'm going to say this. Bodybuilding was once a more modest display of strength, health, and fitness. You got to go back to the 40s and 50s to really say that, back in the Steve Reeves days, if anybody can Google that name. He was a top bodybuilder in the late 40s, early 50s. And then, of course, the steroids started to get into the sport, 60s, 70s, 80s, and then the GH in the 90s onward. But it really is. Some people, this is a growing debate. Is it a sport? Is it just the display of muscularity? You know, I think the Weeders tried to change the sport in the 70s and 80s to turn it more into a sport than a display. But at the end of the day, it's really a display of, you know, muscularity. That's what it is.
You know, I get trying to make my performance better. I was a hockey baseball player. And, you know, if the Montreal Canadiens said I could play with them, if, you know, I got a little bigger and better and I was in my 20s, that's a done deal for me. So I can see the allure here of getting better to, you know, make the show, right? And you're in your 20s, you're not thinking about dying or getting addicted. That would be very enticing, I would think.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. A lot of guys, start off in their 20s thinking they got loads of time. There's no health issue. And a lot of guys can weather 5, 10 years of taking this stuff off and on. You're still rolling the dice. I mean, another story, Dallas McCarver passed away when he was 26. He paid the ultimate price when they did an autopsy. His organs were 2 to 3 times larger than normal. And again, my heart goes out to the friends, family, and fans. I always want to reach out to them, number one. It's sad what happened there, but we also need to balance some of these stories with a warning. We've got to warn guys, guys coming out of high school, college in their 20s, 30s, or even guys who are in their 50s who are stumbling on some of the stuff on the internet and thinking it's some like a fountain of youth, if you will. So we get, this, we always got to be sensible about what's happening and warn people that the bridge is out ahead.
Yeah, the fountain of youth thing would be good right now for me. But I can see that, and I think most addictions, and I'm an addiction counselor, but it's drugs, alcohol, is to make your life better and to make you better. And it works for a while. It does. Sin is fun for a season. And I think it takes a lot of courage for you to be out front on this, on, I thought this would work and be a good idea, and it didn't. That takes a lot of courage. And I'm sure there's people out there, a lot of younger guys, who think, hey, this will change everything.
At first onlook, it does look like it's a game changer. You think, well, why wouldn't I not? Everybody else seems to be doing it. But here's the things. Here's something I try to also come in on the subject, just a little bit of a different angle. Some of the guys are really abusing this stuff for what they want to become champions. They want to make their mark in the world. It goes past just looking good for some guys. And for me, it was I want to make it big. I want to move to California. I had stars in my eyes. I remember seeing some of these photo shoots of these guys with the Santa Monica Mountains in the background. I wanted to escape the cold climate. I thought bodybuilding is my ticket. I'm going to be the national champion. Get out of here. Move to California. Get some advertising work and be the next Arnold. It doesn't work that way though. So I mean, there's different camps. Some guys just want to look good on the beach. That's fine. Other guys, they want to be a championship bodybuilder. And I was kind of in the second camp. But one thing I don't know if we've got time in this segment. One thing I point out, and I mentioned this on show up here. We do up here in Canada at the Cross Live. God has said eternity in our hearts. No matter how high you get in any sport, business, whatever it is, you'll always have that longing for something better because God has set eternity in our hearts. The things on earth, they don't satisfy. They just don't. Ronnie Coleman, 8-time Mr. Olympia champion, one time was interviewed and they asked him a question: "Are you satisfied the way you look?" He said, "No, never, never totally satisfied." This is the top bodybuilder in the world telling us that. J. Paul Getty was once the world's wealthiest individual back in the 60s. I don't know if you guys remember that name. And he was asked a question one time: "What would make you happy?" He said, "One more dollar. One more dollar." This is the world's wealthiest man, one of the top guys. You can't satisfy the things. You can't satisfy your heart down here. You just can't.
George, I'll just let you know too, when Sean was saying that he wanted to become the next Arnold, he wasn't referring to me. He was referring to Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't know if you
That
know that.
was that was a given. That was a given.
Okay, I didn't know if you knew that or
No,
not.
but thanks for clearing that up for people. I'm sure our listeners are very confused.
Well, I think
And
they are, but now I think they're not confused because
yeah.
I did iron that out. All right, let me take
I'll probably get that straightened out, guys. Thanks a lot.
Sean Maves is our guest on Real Recovery. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, lots more just ahead.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome back to Real Recovery. If you just joined us, we're chatting tonight about a little bit of body dysmorphia, maybe a little bit of that, maybe a little bit about how we want to improve ourselves, but to what degree? And are you willing to go as far as taking steroids? And then all of a sudden you're down that train and you're thinking, how much more can I take? And how much more how far do I want to take this? And Sean Maves is our guest. He was a former bodybuilding champion and also a person that experimented with steroids for several years. And he got out of that by the grace of God. And now he wants to encourage others to stay clean and not go down that road. And God's got a great ministry ahead for him. And we're talking about that. And George, when you have bodybuilding titles and you feel alone with your trophies, did you ever feel alone with your trophy, with your punt, pass, and kick competition trophy, or was it not a trophy? Was it a little ribbon or something?
No, I'm wearing it right now. Okay, it's a medal.
Yeah, it's a medal.
No, I just thought more would come afterwards, and I'm still waiting.
Yeah,
so.
Sean, go ahead, George.
I've heard Tom Lehman, the golfer, talked about that when he woke up the day after winning the British Open at a breakfast I was at, a prayer talk breakfast. And it was stunning to me because you think if you get this, it's going to be good enough. And the guys that have done it all say it's not.
Yeah.
And I hear that.
When they were interviewing Boris Becker, the great Wimbledon champion, he had won when he was 17, won his second title at 19. And the interviewer asked him what he considered to be his biggest challenge. And Boris, at age 19, said, "Not killing myself." Very tragic. So you can have all kinds of success. You can have athletic prowess. You can have accomplishments, and yet you're as empty as can be. And Sean, I appreciate you sharing your story with us tonight. You had those very same feelings. What does God have you to do now? How are you working out your recovery?
Yeah, I know. There's still some recovery. I find myself sometimes, taking my shirt off, thinking, man, you gotta start working out again. So there's still some recovery issues. But the temptation to take steroids is long gone. I mean, one of the best days for me was remembering that day when I threw the last batch of steroids in the garbage and never looked back. That was back when I was 24 years old. But, it's been a long journey. God has been gracious. There was different things in my life that I had to deal with as, the years went on. I went through my first marriage fail, went through divorce recovery in that area. And I was remarried to a lovely, lovely lady, my wife, Victoria, 14 years ago. And about 4 years ago, I started to do a little bit of Christian TV up here in Canada on Canada's Yes TV. At the Cross Live is a call-in show that I co-host on occasion. And I started to do some radio shows like this one, talking about some of the Faith of Fitness topics that I write about in Faith of Fitness magazine, which is an online magazine. So those are some of the things that that I've been doing the last 3-4 years. And on top of that, doing small group and growing in the Lord. I've read, working through the Bible. I've read about 75% of the Bible. I was trying to go cover to cover, trying to learn verses so I'm effective on the college show that I sometimes co-host. And, it's been a journey, been a great journey.
I think we're living now in the most body-obsessed culture of our that I can remember. I mean, there were times when people wanted to improve how they looked, but I think there's never been more of a time now that people are taking it to such extremes, and they're probably more desperate than ever to try to reach their goals. And I see that in, physique competitions and all that, where people do put their lives kind of in danger and at risk. And when I see younger athletes using, and I think to myself, God's given you all this natural strength and ability, and you're already tampering with it at a young age.
Yeah, no question. People are tampering with God's original design. Like our bodies weren't meant to take all these drugs. And now this is something I've talked about on Facebook and YouTube and some of the TV radio shows. The real you is not what you see. The real you is your soul, which is your intellect, your emotion, and your will. It's not really your physique. We live in this culture, like you mentioned earlier. It's kind of an empty culture. You can look okay on the outside, but inside, you can be wasting away. Look at some very popular, successful people who have recently taken their life. Anthony Bourdain, Kate Spade, Robin Williams. There was a top five bodybuilder, Luke Sandow, who took his life about a year and a half ago. he committed suicide. So, I mean, what I'm trying to say is you can look okay on the outside, but inside, you know, your soul can be empty. You really can. So we concentrate so much on the outside now. We live in this empty culture, big houses, empty homes. So many people looking good on the outside. 50 to 60 million gym membership in the United States alone before COVID. So a lot of people are taking time, spending time looking on the outside, but inside, a lot of empty lives out there.
That's very interesting. I think for a long time, guys, technically, I would have been an exercise bulimic. And we talked about eating disorders before, but I used to work out. One of the big reasons, you know, made me feel better is I could eat what I wanted. And rather than control the diet, you know, by saying no, which is a word I don't have in my vocabulary, I would just work that off. And I think a lot of people are like that. And exercise gives us a lot of positives. Not going to the Lifetime, the gym. Sean, for me, for a long time, I swim and do yoga and lift some light weights, very light, probably. And I miss the social part, too. It's part of a lifestyle, you know?
Oh, yeah, there's no question. It's wonderful to get into the gym and do the exercise. You know, those positive endorphins are released and you get a bit of social activity. You know, you see guys, maybe you don't know their name, but at least you say hello to them. And, you know, we've been shut down here off and on 15 months in Toronto, lockdowns. I miss the gym. We're just counting the days now that we can go back into the gym. So there's definitely, you know, here's the thing I'd like to remind people. The Bible's not silent on most subjects. Paul says physical training has some value, but godliness has value in this life and the life to come. So God, you know, God has made us in his image. If I'm talking to a Christian, your body's a temple of the Holy Spirit. You know, you can be tempted to swing way over to the left and not do anything. You know, live out this sedentary lifestyle, be a spectator instead of a participant, you know, eat the average North American diet, saturated fats, high carbs, sugar drinks, alcohol, you name it. That's why we have a 30% obesity rate in some states and provinces in Canada, US. I mean, you know, it's one of those subjects. You can go too far to the left or too far to the right. You really can.
Yep.
So, Sean, when you have opportunities, when you get back into the gym, do you have, you know, God always takes what he's given you to do, and you take your experience and your and the things that he has broken you on, and then you've got this wealth of knowledge and information and compassion and empathy to turn around and have very intentional conversations with people. You must be able to read people from a distance to say, yep, you're probably headed down a wrong road.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. What I really try to do is reach out to people on social media right now. But certainly when I'm in the gym and I have an opportunity to talk to somebody about, you know, all these topics, I engage.
Well, God bless you and your ministry. And thank you so much for doing the show. It's been a delight to meet you.
No, thanks a lot, Bill and George. Great to have you. Great to be on
thanks,
the show
Sean.
Today.
Yep.
God bless.
That wraps up another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great night. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.